97.5 The Fanatic.
Let the party begin!
The show starts now.
Yeah, it starts now. John Kincaid Show on The Fanatic. And a good morning to you. Hopefully you have had a good night's sleep. Hopefully you're smiling after last night. And if you don't know what happened, you may have done what I did, but I put on the app, the At-Bat app, which I consider to be the best money that I spend on an app all year long is the MLB At-Bat app.
Welcome to the party.
After the seventh inning, I gave up on the game. I was traveling. I knew I had to travel today, so I had to make sure the bag was ready to go, got myself ready for bed, put the game on the app, and I told my wife, good night. Yeah, this one's a loss. And then all hell broke loose. And I would not, I am so superstitious, I would not turn the app off and go back on and watch it on TV. I was afraid that somehow I was going to jinx it, as if I have anything to do with the outcome. Phillies with a stirring comeback last night. And I said it earlier to Bob that it seems to me, and it may be factually incorrect, but in baseball, in years where teams have sort of great seasons or exciting seasons, those kind of things happen early. And you look back at the end of the year and you go, they set the tone. And last night, the bats were terrible. And we're not even getting into the fielding yet, and we will. And they managed to just keep their composure and keep their poise, and then with a swagger, came back late. Phillies are 3-1, now have two chances to win another series at home versus a hated rival, and now you're 1-0 in the division. I don't want to celebrate a April victory like it's of exemplary meaning, but last night was pretty cool.
It was real cool. Yeah, it was real cool. And like I said to you when we were talking this morning, to me, in baseball, things are more contagious than in any other sport because you go week, you don't go week to week or you play every few days. It's every day. And I just think it's something that carries over. The Mets gave up 5 runs in the 8th inning last night to lose that game. That's going to carry over to today a little bit for somebody, for some people. It'll carry over to for the Phillies also. That was just a great 8th inning. And it was, you know, I was sitting there and you were telling the story, John, and I told you I was sitting in my family room watching the game. And my wife came out and she's like, they're down 4-0. You still watching this game? And I'm like, I said, yeah, they're not that they don't look good tonight, but they have bats. Something might happen. You never know. And then I kept running back in and telling her they're down 4-1. It's now 4-3. They're up 5-4. They're a fun team that you can't count them out of any game with those bats that they have.
They didn't give up last night, and I gave up on it. I mean, and I didn't give up on the game following it, but I thought that night was dead in the water. And Jamie, I would suggest that in the last 3-4 years, that game would have been a loss.
Yeah, probably. It's hard to give up on the team when you have a Schwarber, JT, Bryce, Castellanos, Reese, top of the order coming up late in the game. I mean, that's nasty. There's no breaks in that at all. The opposing pitcher, you could just kind of see him like, damn.
Well, like, you can't pitch around anymore.
No.
You can't pitch around anyone. And what I loved about it was, so Realmuto hits the home run to make it 4-3. Castellanos comes up. He's a guy that faces under 4 pitches in at bat. Under the league average. Like, he's swinging.
Absolutely.
He's up there swinging. And he walks. And then Hoskins gets the double and he scores. Those are the things that really make you say, all right, this is a good. He didn't go up and do what he normally does. He got on base because that's what he had to do.
And the relievers were awesome.
Oh, they were fantastic.
Were great. They were great.
Pat, Castellanos had some wheels that I really didn't know he had that, or he got
he
around
took off.
Fast. He did. He took off last night.
When the ball was initially hit, I thought, all right, sweet, you know, right in the corners.
Exactly.
It slowed down so much, I said, oh my God, he's going to score. You know, I mean, I don't know if it's just the weather or what, but that ball kind of died in the grass. And
could it be all the rain? Maybe all the rain?
No,
even though they have that drainage system.
It could be, yeah. I mean, it was a bullet off the bat, and then it just kind of died over there, so... I expected him to score when it slowed down, but it was fun.
Bradford White Water Heaters are here for the pro. Bradford White will take care of you. They have the they know the local installers in your area. They can install it. They'll take great care of you. All right, let's get to the other story of the night. And it is one where I refuse to do the, at least me, I refuse to do the typical Philly sports radio thing. Alec Bohm, and by the way, I want to thank Meredith, Meredith, who said to me, she was reading lips. She reads lips. She's with a Fellowship for the Blind.
Oh, wow.
And she said she thought that he said, that Alec Bohm said, I effing hate those plays.
Well, that's not good either.
It ends up that he said, I effing hate this place.
Yeah.
And I would say...
I said the same thing yesterday when the news came out from our city. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all I will say about the Alec Bohm is this. Alec, that was a terrible night last night.
Oof.
Horrible night in the field. You have yet to not reach base this year, though, in six at-bats. That's incredible. So congratulations on that. But congratulations on this even more. Every one of us, especially when we were, 24? 20, something like that? When we're that age, we say stupid stuff, or we say stuff impulsively, or we say something in the moment that we may not mean, we may mean, it may slip out, whatever. But when given the chance to hide from it, Alec Bohm chose to accept it. No one could have ever said for sure what he said. He took ownership of it. And to me, I will respect that. Of a young man, an older man, or whoever, when confronted with something where you have the chance to lie, you have the chance to deflect, he stood there, he took it, he explained himself, and to me, he gets respect. I think it's a non-story. Now, his fielding is not, but him having that little meltdown on the field and saying something like that where there's a camera, to me, Bob, non-story, especially when a young man steps up and says, yep, I said it. And he had every opportunity. He could have said, I said something else. And no one could have proven it. And his teammates would have been the only one to know. I admire the fact that Alec Bohm did that, and I give the young man a round of applause for that.
I admire him for standing up for it, absolutely. Is there something deeper that he says, I hate this effing place, at when he's got a handful of games under his belt playing in this effing place?
Correct.
So why he's saying that, I don't commend him at
it's
all.
The Bronx cheers.
I know.
I know why he did it and all, but like... You can get booed, the Bronx cheers, all that, and you can say this effing blows or whatever. But I hate this effing place is kind of more to it than that.
I know what it means. It means Alec Bohm is reading social media. It means Alec Bohm listens to sports talk radio. It means Alec Bohm knows what people are saying about him. Alec.
I don't think so.
What do you think?
No, I only because, like, I don't think he's been ripped. He hasn't been Ben Simmons level ripped for his defense and all that. I think he's in a bad place mentally. Like, and
yeah,
I'm
but,
a,
but
I'm
the thing talking, is, like, saying that though, what he said means he's listening.
No,
means
I don't
he's
think
listening.
So.
He's got rabbit ears.
No, I think he's annoyed. Like, I think it's we talked about it before about with athletes. Like, I know I screwed up. I'm the hardest person on me. So like, he knows he just had two errors.
Three.
Yeah. Well, at the time,
at
he
the
had
time
two.
It was two. Yes. Uh-huh.
And then he makes a routine throw over, and he gets Bronx cheered, and he said what he said. I don't necessarily blame him. I guess.
I do.
Like, I think you're painting the picture that Alec Bohm's going home and just like hopping on Twitter and seeing every tweet and is angry at the world. I don't get that impression.
Well, I absolutely do. I think it's rabbit ears. 100%.
I think he's going through it. I think he knows he sucks. I think he... Well, defensively, he's the worst third baseman I think I've ever seen in my life.
It's like, terrible.
Let's not sugarcoat things. He's abysmal.
Remember, though, last year he couldn't hit. This year he's yet to not make reach base.
I think he knows in the back of his head that he's in trouble because, look, playing first base isn't as easy as a lot of people say it is, but it's probably his only hope. And outside of that, he's limited to DH. So he knows that his bat has to be awesome or he's in trouble. I just don't think you can get him to be a third baseman or any other position player. And I think in the back of his head, he's smart enough to know that he's in trouble.
And there's no room for him on this roster to be a DH.
No.
Not with
Schwarber.
This team has to have DH be applied to other people. Alec Bohm cannot be this team's DH.
And he knows that.
But Castellanos, here's one thing I'm going to say. And looking at some of his performances in the infield, and I had to go back because I don't really remember him playing the infield. So I had to go back and look. Castellanos can play third.
He played in Detroit, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he came up as a third baseman.
It's been a while.
It has been a while.
But I would believe that Castellanos could play a better third.
He's tall and lanky, too.
But he could play a better third.
John, you could play a better third right now.
My range would be terrible.
You might be able to hit the bag, though.
I might be able to. I don't know. My arm would suck, so I don't know. But, I mean, Bob, I mean, where do you put it?
It might dig deeper with me than it does you guys, what he said last night, because it was all on him last night. It has nothing to do with the fans. If he came off the field and said, I effing stink, I'm okay with that, and that's good. Not that he blamed other people, but what are you talking about?
Why are you worried about the fans?
Why are you worried? This place? I hate this place? Really? You hate Philadelphia? After what you just did, you hate Philadelphia? What the hell did Philadelphia do? So I'm not going to say, look, the guy's got to get out of here. But when I saw it last night, I did take a step back.
Was it a red flag for you? A siren going off?
It is. Yeah, I got to admit. It is. It is. I'm not saying, like, look, you can't have Alec Bohm on the team and this and that. I'm not saying that. And as you said, John, God bless him for coming out afterwards. But in the heat of the moment, you find a lot of things out about a person. And, yeah, I'll just keep it in the back of my mind. I'll put it that way. It's not something I'm going to forget about.
I learned nothing about somebody in good times. And I've always believed that.
Right.
When things are going well, I never learn anything about anybody. It's when the chips are down is where I see somebody's character come out.
Yeah, I mean, both, you know, when people were debating it last night, it was, I hate these plays or I hate this place. The play is more problematic to me because that's a routine play.
Right.
And if you hate that play, you're not playing the field for me. You hate this place, you're feeling the pressure.
There is one thing if I was playing third. If I could even have gotten to that ball, I would know not to throw it. Not to make an attempt at a throw.
He's cooked.
You have no chance to make. So why? That's the thing that I can't. Again, this team doesn't play smart baseball. They don't make smart decisions on the base paths. They don't make smart decisions whether to throw the ball. And I am a little shocked by that. That at some point they don't have a little team meeting.
The Phillies way.
Guys, we can't do this.
Yeah, I got to tell you, if I'm on the field there, and you know, we've all been on the field in baseball, saw whatever it may be, and a guy gets a tough play like that, you're screaming, hold it. There's not even thought about for a half a second. I mean, look at the way he looked when he was trying to throw that ball.
Oh, my gosh.
He looked like he was on ice skates about to fall down.
Hey, with Simplicity, their mowers give your lawn a quality cut and those signature stripes. You can visit them at simplicitymfg.com/dealers to find a dealer near you. So I heard some of the discussion is, by the way, great discussion on Cuz Radio and then also on the Mike Missanelli show regarding the Matisse Thybulle situation and him being missing in Toronto, that they won't be able to have him for the games. Here's the math that was bothering me yesterday. And Bob, I really, really wanted to throw it to you on this one and figure this out. So Danny Green is expected to cover the 26 minutes that Matisse Thybulle normally plays in those road games. So Danny Green's going to slide up. He's going to be Matisse Thybulle. Danny Green usually plays 22 on his own. So you're only asking Danny Green to play 4 more minutes a game. I'm fine with that. I don't think that's a big issue. What the big issue to me is, who's covering Danny Green's minutes? Who's covering 22 minutes on this team? And I don't know that they need a hero, but I know that they need somebody who's up for that challenge. And I was trying to figure out the math yesterday. Who's covering Danny Green's 22 minutes where it's not going to... Maybe Danny Green covering for Thybulle doesn't sink them, but somebody covering Danny Green's minutes is what ends up sinking them in Toronto.
Do you have it in front of you? The minutes per game. What's Niang's minutes per game?
Okay, let me get it here. I'll pull it up.
But yeah,
Bob,
sure.
Bob, I want to get your thought on that. As far as the, like, to me, you're asking, there's 22 minutes a game that Danny Green plays that now have to be covered. And then if you say Niang is covering his 22 minutes, then as far as that, then somebody is, then shifts over, then somebody has to cover Niang's minutes. I mean, George Niang right now.
He's at 22 also.
He's at 22 also. So, I mean, you're still looking for 22 minutes.
Career high for him.
You're still looking at 22 minutes.
Hand, milk, and bake. Yeah, man, we're talking shake-isms.
Wow, no. 22
well,
minutes?
You're going to get 18 minutes from Shake Milton. You have to. I mean, you just have to. You have to have somebody in there. Early in the year, Danny Green was putting up 26, a couple times 30 minutes.
Right.
You know, I think I said it yesterday. His legs look the best to me right now that they have than they have all year. So he's going into these playoffs in a good spot. Does that mean you can expect 32 to 35 minutes out of him? No, I don't think you're going to get the best Danny Green in those amount of minutes. But, yeah, you're going to have to play Shake Milton.
Damn, he's at 21 minutes per game.
Who?
Shake?
I mean, Shake's at 21, and then...
He's
going to have to be 28.
So we're still missing. Like, we're still missing these minutes that I think they...
No, not 28, because the starters will play more. They're
going
to take a bigger chunk of the bye.
Starters playing what? 2 minutes more? 3 minutes
more? They're going to have to play this team minimum 40 minutes.
Harden's going to go like 43, 44 probably.
Embiid's going to be 41, 42.
Embiid's going to be 40-ish, yeah.
I can only imagine.
Tobias Harris is going to go 41, 42.
He's going to have to be 42.
Yeah.
I can only imagine what that's going to look like.
So you're
going to
have
James Harden going 3 or 4 more minutes a game?
He's been saving himself. He's ready.
Well, Harden goes, I mean, if you look at Harden goes 38, 39 minutes a game.
I know. You like your boy Perk, right?
Yeah, big Perk.
Yeah.
Carry the hell on.
And he's saying he's seen him hit more front rims than he's seen him hit in his career in his Sixers tenure. He's seen him hit more front rims when he misses.
His shot's off.
And but it's way off. That never happens. He's like, this doesn't happen. Now, he's suspecting that it's the hammy.
Could be.
He seems to be suspecting. Now, by the way, he came out twice in a 3-day period and said it is not.
Who did?
That's what James Harden said. Nothing medical, nothing physical.
Yeah.
So he said two in the last 3 days, he said it.
James Harden is very far down on my list of concerns entering the playoffs. You know what I mean?
No.
I know why.
He's probably top three.
I think he's the biggest reason they may win or lose.
He's not even in my top four.
Wow. I think he's the biggest reason they may that they could lose, because he has to be exceptional. Without him being exceptional, without him being better, if he plays the way he's played so far,
they can win.
I don't believe so.
When he's on the court, whether it's with reserves, when he's on the court with reserves, he's putting up similar numbers to what he was doing in Houston. When he's on the court with Embiid, they're a 99th percentile offensive team. I don't have concerns about him.
Wow.
Do I want his shot to drop more? Obviously. But he is not my concern.
Well, he hasn't shown you that he's...
Doc Rivers is my concern. Backup center is my concern.
You don't think he's got
a
score?
I'm not worried about a backup center for 8 minutes.
I'm not worried about that either.
I am.
More than James Harden?
More than James Harden.
I'm not worried about him. I know what we're going to get from James Harden.
What does Harden have to score average to win a playoff
series? I bet you this playoffs he gives you 22, 12, and 7.
How about they need...
And I'll take that every day.
I'm going to tell you 22. If he averages 22, it's not enough. I'll tell you right now, if he averages 22, I think they lose. I think they need him to score more than that.
I won't put a set number on it like that, but I do look at that shot and say, okay, if he's not scoring, like if he can't hit his outside shot consistently, I'm backing off of him. I'm going zone. I'm making sure that I'm watching Joel Embiid on the inside. I think his outside shot is pretty important to the way this team wants to run their offense. That's what I'm concerned
about. I don't think anybody's backing off of him, even if his shot's not dropping.
Well, I don't want to get beat dribble drive, so how do you not get beat dribble drive? I back off of a guy. And if he's not hitting an outside shot, I'm backing off. I'm playing passing lanes. I'm letting him shoot from outside.
Yeah, I just don't think James Harden gets left alone in the playoffs.
Pat, Pat, if you said biggest concern, I think Harden, to me, will be the reason they win or lose this series. I really believe. If he's not exceptional, if he doesn't have a great series, I think they're going home.
Yeah, probably.
Because I don't know
exceptional.
Who would be the better than he's been as a Sixer. His numbers must be better than he's been as a Sixer.
But his numbers are the same exact thing he's been for the last year and a half or two.
The numbers have to be better than he's been. Well, I'm gonna insist.
They're not.
They're probably not going to be. Then I don't know.
This is who he is.
If he doesn't elevate on the scoring end, this team, I do not believe, is winning.
I mean, so here's the question that needs to be asked to Jamie. Has he been as good as you wanted him to be coming here? Or, like, how would you describe how he's been in the 22 games he's played since coming here?
Exactly what he was.
Wow. You really? You, this is the Harden you expected?
I probably expected his jump shot to be a little better, but when I look at his numbers over the last year and a half or two, it's exactly what he's been. It's not like he's fallen off a cliff.
I thought, Pat, I thought it was the Harden we saw in his debut, his first 4 out of 5 games when he played.
That's kind of the guy I expected.
And I think that's what Sixer fans thought.
I think he's still really good.
Yeah, but we haven't seen that guy.
But I agree with Jamie. I think he's still... Yeah, I think he's still elite.
21 points, 10.5 rebounds, 7 assists since he got here as a Sixer.
21's not going to do it. If he averages less, I think he's got to get like 24 in the playoffs.
He shot 40% from the field, 32% or 33% from three.
He's a 33% three-point shooter over the last 2 years. He's not going to get better. Like, this is what he is now, and it's okay.
We're going to find out if it's okay in the next 2 weeks.
I really don't think if they lose the playoffs, it's because of James Harden.
Okay, well, we're going to find out.
I think there's
out.
A lot of other holes and maybe a coach, and we'll see what he does with his rotations that are much bigger concerns to me. And, oh, yeah, the team's highest paid player is a big concern to me.
Hey, Philly sports trips are taking fans to San Diego. What a great weekend this would be. For the weekend of June 23rd, you can watch the Phils in a 4-game series, and you can join them. Philly Sports Trips does it first class. Go to phillysportstrips.com. They do an exceptional job. It is going to be absolutely awesome. So a little birdie tells me that a month from today, we get something big for the Eagles. I'll tell you what it is coming up. It's the John Kincaid Show here on 97.5, The Fanatic. Okay, I have to tell you about something that I'm going to start. And I made a decision that I wanted to try something. I heard ads for Co-Pair, and I decided I wanted to try it. Do you know what Co-Pair is? Well, first off, it's not a diet program. But Co-Pair is a program that helps you take control of one of the most important decisions that you ever make in your life. Wellness, health. Trying to do the best. And right now, Co-Pair started up in Philly this January, and it's becoming the new standard in weight loss. But what it is, it helps people for whatever your goal is, whatever has been your problem. For me, I asked my wife, and in 2 decades of marriage, I have lost and gained the same 20 to 25 pounds over and over again. And I put on 19 pounds since I've returned to Philadelphia. I don't like it. But I know I can take it off, but the problem is I always put it back on. That's where Vance is going to come in. And Vance is going to help me understand how to get into better habits, how to do things. This isn't just going to be some diet program. This is a program about healthy living and smart decisions. And I can tell you after my coach, Vance, and I had our first session, I'm feeling good about it. It is 100% individualized. No two programs are the same. You will love their staff. It is absolutely awesome. And when you reach your goal, you've got free support from your coach forever. Here's what I want you to do. Call now and start changing your life forever. You got to check out Co-Pair. Co-Pair will make a difference for you. Check out our friends at Co-Pair. Tell them John Kincaid sent you.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Well, let's hop on a live line right now. Let's go to the Comcast Business Hotline, where every day in business is a big day. Let Comcast Business keep you ready for what's next. Adam Schefter joining us here on the John Kincaid Show. Adam, just quickly and just to get it out of the way, because people just want to know, obviously there was a lot of heat and a lot of fire coming your way. It appears you've handled it, but if you wanted to say anything on that Dwayne Haskins tweet, you may.
Yeah, John, appreciate you asking. Basically, the tweet was insensitive, mistake. It was definitely not my intent in any way, shape, or form. Wish I could have the tweet back. Can't. Did the best I could to address the issue. Basically, I'm sorry that it took away from the dialogue about Dwayne Haskins and who he was as a person, a husband, a friend, and more. and my bad. We learned from it, and my apologies to his family, friends, players in the National Football League.
Adam, we were all appalled here on the show because we've never, ever said anything or tweeted anything that we regret. So we were shocked because we've all been in that position. And our boss, Joe Bell, brought up to us a thing. He says, when you do live radio, when you do live TV, when you have social media, you're bound to come across things in life that you go, damn, I wish I just said that just a little bit differently.
Yeah, well, and that's an example of it. And, you know, feel terrible about it. And,
well,
what are you going to say?
I think you said it very succinctly there. Now, what we would like for you to do, could you tell us that the Honey Badger's coming? Would you be able to do that for us? Or could you? We're wondering because it appears Rodney McLeod's camp was waiting to hear that the Eagles were moving on before he was going to move on. And that tells me that something changed. He heard information, or the Eagles figured something out and said, Rodney's not part of our plans. Could that be a big name, you know, pickup like the Honey Badger?
Well, the fact that they've talked to him at all tells you that there's some level of interest. And he's found a very lukewarm market so far. Like, it has not been all that great. And I think he's coming off a year where he's still the Honey Badger. He's still a playmaker. He's still a guy you want on your team. He was beloved and well-respected in that locker room. I think when you talk to some people in the league, they feel like last year he didn't tackle as well for whatever reason. But that's a guy you want on your team every day of the week. And so I think he's got a point to prove. I think he wants to prove that. To me, he'd be an asset for a team to have. We'll see whether Philadelphia makes that move. I think what always happens here is that right before the draft, there are teams that always try to plug a couple of holes with some veterans who are still on the street. And there are some notable, significant free agents who are still out there. The Honey Badger, Stephon Gilmore right now, Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry. I mean, there are some players who can help teams. And so I don't know when it's going to happen or who's going to do it, but these guys I would think are going to get opportunities here before much longer, and it wouldn't surprise me if it comes before the draft.
Shefty, speaking of the draft, when you hear names like we've all heard and read leading up to this draft, is there any that really stick out to you that have either jumped way higher than they were when the talks originated, or maybe have fallen a little bit more than when they were first predicted?
Yep. So I think when we come back to the draft, you always come back to quarterbacks, and I've always thought all along, you know, I was having a conversation with Pete Thamel, the college football reporter for ESPN, and we were having this debate a couple months ago on my podcast talking about the quarterbacks, and I told him that Malik Willis would be the first quarterback picked in this draft, and it would be higher than people thought. And he's like, Kenny Pickett will be first. I said, let's bet lunch.
Sure.
And we bet lunch on the first quarterback to be picked. And I just think, and I still think, that Malik Willis not only will be the first quarterback picked, but it's going to go higher than people think. I think he's a potential top 10, maybe even top 5 pick in the end. It would not shock me. There are people who think that, you know, the Detroit Lions are playing coy and that they wouldn't be surprised if they wound up going for a guy like Malik Willis. And I know some people say, well, that's early for Malik Willis. That's fine. That's a fair point. I'm not going to argue that, but here's what I would say is if there's a quarterback that you really like, whether that's Malik Willis or Kenny Pickett or Sam Howell or whoever it is, if there's a quarterback you like, when is it ever too early for him? Never.
No, there's no price too high for a great quarterback, Adam.
Yeah, that you believe in.
Yeah.
That's the guy you believe in. And I just think that Malik Willis, his intangibles are such that he'll go up higher on the board than I think people think.
Yeah, to me, that was going to kind of be one of my questions here. Usually when you sit back at the end of the first round and you kind of evaluate it, usually there's a big story, like somebody slipped further than you thought. Yeah. There was a run on quarterbacks earlier than you thought. What's going to be the story of this first round this year, do you think?
Well, you know, it's always one of those surprising things, right? Like, I mean, every year there's some guy that we talk about, whether it's Jimmy Clausen or Daquan Bowers or whoever it may be, that is projected to be a high pick that all of a sudden is still on the board there later in the first round into the second round. It happens every year. I don't know who that's going to be this year. But inevitably there'll be some issue that surfaces, a medical issue, a character question, you know, there's been videos that surface on draft day.
Yes.
People finding stuff on social media. I mean, all sorts of things. It's, you know, it's this incredible reality show that unfolds over 3 days and the 4 hours on Thursday night. And just think that that's one of the great parts about this is that there's so much drama and intrigue that you just never know how this is going to fall. I don't know who that guy is that's going to fall. I don't know who that guy is that's going to have a miraculous jump up. Too hard to say right now, but you know, this is one of those drafts. You know, not a lot of quarterback talent, seemingly, according to the people around the league, and it's a lot of linemen, a lot of wide receivers, a lot of wide receivers. So, you know, teams that are going wide receiver early, I think they're going to be pretty happy.
I am intrigued because of I've got pretty good eyes and ears down in Athens, Georgia, from my time in Atlanta. And I've been told that the Philadelphia Eagles have been, if they're not the most visible team having people around Athens looking at players, they are one of them. And to me, there's so many interesting things there. How important is it when Howie got connected to the Alabama staff and started to see their operation? How much does that actually work, the connections with college coaching staffs and everything? Does it become like a funnel, like a tunnel to the NFL, as I should say?
Well, first of all, to your first point there, John, I would venture to tell you, I know you say the Eagles are spending a lot of time there, but I would venture to tell you that every team is spending a lot of time around Athens, Georgia this year and digging in. And look, like every business, it becomes a relationship-based business. So you're leaning on people you know and trust and people you can believe in. There are certain people that I like to call before the draft every year just because I just know how they think. I know the quality and character and integrity that they have. And it's just always interesting to hear players that they like and players that they don't like, players that they've taken off their board, players that they think will rise up. And so, Howie's connections, I mean, all the connections of everyone in the front office. It's not just Howie. It's connections with every team. There are people that are tied into equipment people and, you know, people on staffs, all sorts of things like that. And so I think that, you know, you could study all the tape you want. Everybody is going to see something different when they're looking at a guy, but it still is a relationship business, and you're leaning on people you trust, and the Eagles have a lot of them.
Shefty, with Tyrann Mathieu still out there, and we were talking about what team's interest or why the lack of interest in him, not counting the money, where is he as a pro football player right now? I know that he's been to Pro Bowls two of the last 3 years, but what is the league's feeling of where he is right now as far as play?
Again, I still think he's viewed as a top playmaker. I think the one knock on him that's come up when I've spoken to people, again, is the tackling. But the guy is so respected and so, you know, beloved and so appreciated. To me, he's going to be an asset for whoever signs the guy. The Chiefs made a decision where they felt like their money was better invested in Justin Reed. That's what they felt. And we're going to find out whether or not that's proven to be accurate. But somebody's going to sign the Honey Badger, and I guarantee he's going to be making plays and he's going to help a team next year.
Adam, if you had to guess, are the Eagles more interested in spending their salary cap allotment left, or are they more interested in rolling it into next year and kind of gearing up for that season? And it's just a guess on your part.
Well, I had not asked that question, but I think when teams have money put aside right now, it's usually with an eye on the future. Like, you know, if you're asking, boy, they're saving this money for the Honey Badger or whoever, I don't think that's it. You know, I think you're always thinking of the future and how to best maximize your dollars and salary cap space towards the future. I don't think that they're waiting to go on another spending spree here with veteran free agents who are still available. I just think that, you know, it's a process that plays out over time. And, you know, just like if any of us found a $20 bill in our wallet, you know, you're going to put that money to the best use possible. And I think that that's probably the case with them, that they're probably saving that money for future events.
Okay, there are a lot of the draft in the last few years, I think, is, and now we're seeing more trades, sees a lot of movement.
Yeah.
You know, teams moving around. In the first round of this draft, are you expecting it to be a heavy movement draft? Like teams moving up, down, around, trades? Or do you see a lot of teams staying right where they are and taking the best player that they think fits their needs from the position?
Well, let me say this. I'm sure there'll be some movement. But I would guess going in that we'll not get as much movement as normal for a couple of reasons. Number one, the draft class lacks the type of quarterbacks that we believe most teams will be trading up for. So that right there is one limiting factor. The other limiting factor is that we've already seen, I believe, six first-round draft picks traded away. So there already have been a handful of moves that have been made where teams are moving around in the first round. So without a group of players to target to move up for, with there already having been moves, with this draft being deep at wide receiver, deep at lineman, you're not usually seeing a lot of teams give up future ones, future elite picks to move up to go take an offensive or defensive line. It just doesn't really happen very often. Not that they can't, but it's not commonplace. And so with all those factors, my guess is we will get fewer trades on draft day this year in the first round than normal. Now, look, maybe I'm going to be wrong, but I just think it sets up that way in advance, and we'll see how it plays out.
Jamie, you got one last one? Okay, there we go. Hey, Adam, we appreciate it. You know, we're giving away $50 gas cards every hour next week on the show, and I know you're on a tight budget right now. So, I mean, if you really feel like, you could win, you are eligible
John,
to win.
I who doesn't want a $50 gift card? I'm still pissed off. I still haven't eaten my free lunch. Okay, so there you go.
All right, love you, Adam. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.